Well, it's good to be here, and as Jude said, I'm going to talk a little bit about setting the stage and kind of overview what has become and is becoming a critical issue for a lot of people in the public health world, and that is creating an evidence base for mobile health rather than what many of us see as just making up a lot of stories about mobile health. I'm really looking forward to hearing what's going on with the Beacon Communities and Techs for Health, but again, I'm going to kind of jump up a couple more miles and talk about what's going on in the mobile health world more generally. Okay, no relationships to disclose. What the expectations of wireless experts are realized, everyone will have his own pocket telephone and may be called wherever he happens to be. When that invention is perfected, we shall have a new series of daily miracles. That is a quote from Hamptons Magazine. And would anybody like to, even in their own mind, guess how many years ago that was said? The technology for cellular and wireless mobile phones has been around for over 100 years. That quote is over 100 years old now. It was only when the iPhone was introduced that all of a sudden, you know, everybody got the magic of what was happening. Even those of us who were walking around with our Motorola Qs and our Samsungs and Nokias, we were kind of the guys in the wilderness at that point in time. But cell phones are now ubiquitous and are thinking about how to approach public health issues. Tommy Ahonen is one of the real good thinkers. He's actually a Finnish scholar. Communities Dominate Brands is a great blog and also a great book to read. But he talks about mobile phones as the seventh mass media. It's the first personal mass media. Everyone can get an individualized message on their cell phone when you think about it. All right, that technology exists to do today. It's a permanently carried media. We all know that when we walk out the door, it's check for your wallet, check for your keys, make sure you have your cell phone. That's just a ritual that almost all Americans and most people around the world, I think there's 5 billion people running around the world with that at least same one thing in mind. Do I have my cell phone? It's always on mass media. People can always receive messages, especially when they've opted in. It's also got a number of built-in response mechanisms. And when you look at how mobile marketers think about marketing, it's very different from the way broadcast marketers think about marketing. All right. And that, to me, is one of the essential gaps that most people who are using mobile technology for public health have yet to figure out. People can text back. People can click on telephone numbers. People can click on websites. And, oh, yeah, in the case of a last resort, they can also just dial you up. It is not a passive marketing channel. It's a very active marketing channel. And I think that's what people don't get about mobile technology. They just think of it as, let's just put a message through another channel and be done with it. Number five is really important because for those of you who are into the idea of participant-generated content and people should be engaged in the program, mobile phones are always with people when they're creative. When you go on most photo sharing sites these days, whether it's Facebook or whether it's Flickr or whether it's PhotoBucket, the majority of photos that are being uploaded to those sites are being taken by mobile phones now, just as we're having done right now. All right. There are all kinds of ways. You can put apps to record things. You can do apps promotion pictures. So digital files are being uploaded constantly from mobile phones, and we need to be thinking about it as program people and public health people. How do we engage people to be creative about health, not just receive a message through their phone? You're also going to get very accurate audience measurement because, obviously, a phone number is a data point. Every time you send something or receive something, or they send something or receive something, you have data points. And it also captures the social context of people's lives. And I think as we start learning more about how to use cell phones in the context of people's lives, we're going to become much better at this whole fuzzy business of how do we change behavior and improve social conditions. I'm just going to run through these slides real quickly. They're not meant to be read except in the upper right-hand corner. But just to remind you that there's lots of ways of thinking about cell phones. SMS consultation. A lot of work going on in developing countries where community healthcare workers go out meet with their patients, meet with their families, and are relaying information in real time back to a central medical district office where they can capture the data. If there are any problems in the field, they can immediately text back information to that community health worker and in real time be doing interventions. SMS consultation between physicians and between healthcare providers is another very active way of thinking about text messaging. The handheld hospital, even though we have FDA now looking at how do we regulate medical devices, all kinds of medical devices can be hooked up to phones, from sharing x-rays to CAT scans to whether or not you've got an ear infection. Another example of, you know, what we're doing out in the field now is we're even doing intraocular exams and checking for a glaucoma among people by simply using a little attachment to a cell phone. Tracking matters. And again, one of the things that cell phones are real good at is you can use them to count things. And so we're seeing a lot of interest in things like, are people taking their medications, whether they're actually physically entering, yes, I did, or whether we're putting remote sensors on the bottles to record whether or not they've been touched and moved. And again, picturing our health, tracking glucose levels with diabetes is very popular, asthma, a lot of chronic diseases. We're seeing a lot of apps being developed to get these pictures of our health. But the question is there any evidence that these things really make any difference in people's lives and actually improve their health? And just to get to the bottom line, the answer is no. There's very little evidence at this point. Wellness tracking, physical activity. Again, you know, we're seeing a few studies in the physical activity area. We're seeing a few studies in the smoking area. I know there's some things going on in obesity and chronic disease management, but you're not seeing a lot of this data published yet. So I'm part of a group that the NIH and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation put together to talk about mHealth Matters and of how do we generate mHealth evidence. And I'm going to show you a couple slides here and talk a little bit about some of the issues that we've identified in that working group that may also help you thinking through your own research and practice issues. The first is we're generating enormous amounts of data by mobile health. Some of you may be familiar with the fact that you can do self-monitoring of all kinds of physical and behavioral variables, and this notion of big data or the quantified self is just, you know, getting everybody in a tizzy and you run into conferences and everyone's got a story to tell about quantified health, but no one's got any real good data because people haven't even figured out how to crunch that data to make it meaningful to people's lives, all right, and how to actually use that to change things. How do you analyze and integrate that kind of data and all this other kind of data that mobile technologies can generate with other health information? We were talking in the beginning, you know, once you start figuring out whether or not people have personal health records or electronic medical records, and once you figured out that you can actually exchange that information among healthcare providers, now put mobile health data on top of that and imagine the possibilities, or more likely the headaches, that that's going to create for people to figure out how to do that kind of integration. Because again, right now, mobile health is becoming an island in healthcare rather than an integrated part of solutions. And again, you can field interventions with mobile health, but mobile health is also bringing up the issues of how do you provide value and how do you protect the safety of patients. Anytime someone texts their glucose level or whether or not they're having a physical symptom, technically, HIPAA is covering that. So technically, if they're doing that on their cell phone, technically you're breaking the law, right? Because you haven't encrypted it, you haven't insured for privacy for sure, because that data is connected to their cell phone number, and that cell phone number is a personal ID, all right? So there's all this data and all these people telling the stories about how they're getting all these people to swap information and talk to everybody about it. But when you start looking at the privacy and security issues of that information, it's a whole set of headaches that have to be thought through. And that's where the mobile health world is coming to now, is all the storytellers are bumping up against these realities and getting very upset and agitated about the idea that the FDA wants to approve things and that HIPAA and hospitals want to assure privacy of things and that healthcare providers are concerned about whether or not they can be legally liable for doing healthcare via telemedicine or via text message. So some very real issues, I think, that also have to temper, and speaking as one of the enthusiastic proponents of this work, but have to temper the kinds of things that we start thinking about in this day and time about mHealth evidence. There's also lots of opportunities. There's all kinds of new ways of collecting information about people, from people, being contributed by people that we couldn't do before. You know, daily monitoring of symptoms can now be automated using cell phones and simple apps. Enabling the design and delivery of novel interventions like you're here today, and new methods of data collection and analysis. I mean, there are people who just are spending time thinking about nothing more than how do we develop new apps to collect new kinds of data that we can use to either assess intervention or treatment effects. How am I doing? It's
doing well.
The research challenges are, she says I'm doing very well.
You feeling okay?
I'm feeling good.
9 minutes.
9 minutes, all right. We can do the dance after all. Difficult to create controlled and reproducible environments. One of the problems that we're having as we think about research paradigms for mobile health is that the first thing the practitioners will tell you, that includes me, is that you can't reproduce environments like you can in scientific experiments. And the purists will tell you, well, now you've got all kinds of concerns about reliability and especially validity of those results. That's a debate that is not going to be resolved in the next 9 minutes or eight. And it's certainly not going to be resolved in the next year or two, but it's something that in the mHealth community we'll recognize as a very important part of this evidence development is figuring out what kinds of protocols and what kinds of standards can we use for mobile health that may be different from the people who, unless it's a randomized controlled trial, don't believe the evidence. mHealth devices are frequently used by individuals with little training, so even the data can be suspect in terms of its validity and reliability. That's an issue, and it's not going to go away, but it's an issue that people are already raising about mHealth data. There's few gold standard measurements in the mobile environment. If someone says they're monitoring heart rate through a mobile device, I have no idea what that really means, because they normally don't compare it to any kind of standard. They just say, my app measures heart rate, and believe me, it's true. Well, don't believe it that it's true, especially if you're a scientist, and especially if you're interested in whether or not there's evidence to support these things. So what's happening is everyone's backing off and saying, well, if people say mobile health is helping them, then it's good. I've got my story. People have said it works. And that's only going to work in the rah-rah rooms for mobile health. It's not going to work in the scientific community. And again, this whole notion of risk and security become part of the challenge of how do you do research in this environment and protect the rights of people who are participating in, quote, research studies, unquote. I'm not going to go into all the details about these things, but you know, there's a lot of different research questions around validity that need to be done. First of all, there's statistical validity. Do we actually see causal effects? There's so few mHealth trials that are going on that even have comparison groups to do this kind of work with. That's something that requires a lot of other answers. The internal validity issues, can you rule out confounders? If someone says, gee, I saw smoking prevalence rates drops 20% in these 20 smokers that I used this app with, what does that mean? I mean, how many would have naturally stopped smoking over the course of 6 months? You have no idea when that's all they're telling you. So the confounding issue becomes a problem. The validity of the outcome measures. Well, you know, 16 of these smokers told me they quit. Well, what's the validity of their self-report that they quit? Did you do any kind of physiological measurement to validate that? Well, no, because we trust people. Well, thank you, but, you know, stories need data. The generalizability of the results across different situations and across different people is that external validity that we also have to be thinking about. And there's also what I call the ecological validity, but people can go out and do very elaborate mobile health interventions that will not be replicable by anybody else, because they involve so much staff, so much resources, so much time that, you know, it's a great experiment, but it's a so what for the rest of us who are trying to do work in the real world with much fewer requirements and staffing. And again, going back to the notion of randomized clinical trials, these are some of the questions that we are concerning there. The efficacy being demonstrated in quasi-experimental designs is one thing that I think we want to focus on. You know, RCTs should not be the default option for doing mobile studies. It's only when we've discovered through other means that they're feasible and effective that we've used quasi-experimental designs to demonstrate validity and reliability of these findings. And if you want to demonstrate that a mobile health approach is superior to another competing approach to treating a condition, to changing a behavior, then maybe an RCT is deserved. But certainly it shouldn't be the first course of action for research. There's lots of different quasi-experimental designs that we can use. You know, there are even people, I go to lots of mobile health presentations where we don't even have pre-test and post-test data. All we've got is some stories. And that just drives me crazy. I mean, that worked 6 years ago. That should not work in 2012, and especially in 2013. Even having comparison conditions gets to be a real iffy question. And that's just basic stuff. I mean, you learned that in your introduction to statistics. One of the things we also talk about is with all this data that you can collect with mobile, that these N-of-1 studies, you know, someone being their own subject, is a really interesting thing to think more about, because you can do these multiple crossover designs, this ABAB. Okay, let's do the intervention, now let's take it away. Do the results change? Let's add the intervention back in. Does that change the results again? These interrupted time series designs, what's called a stepped wedge or delayed treatment. Let's let our comparison group not have treatment for 6 weeks while our intervention community does. Okay, now let's give the intervention to our comparison group. Now does the comparison group change? Well, if it does, more evidence that maybe that intervention is actually being effective. I'm going to skip that one. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention just to close this mHealth evidence is the recent review of the effectiveness of mHealth behavior change by Gurman et al. And what they looked at is that you really have to think about the selection of the appropriate technology to match the characteristics of the people who you're going to be working with. And there are people who are more of technological gurus who want to convince everybody to use their way of doing things, whether it's an app or an application of an SMS, rather than listening to what the people are doing and using. This whole idea of privacy assurances, again, is being raised and is setting the bar higher for in terms of how do you measure quality of interventions. The idea of two-way communication and targeting and tailoring content so it's linguistically and literacy competent. The timing of the communications, the understanding of the priority group, and having a long-term evaluation, whether that's a six-month evaluation or a one-year or two-year follow-up, are all the kinds of questions that are going into the mobile health mix these days. So I want to close with just four suggestions for you to think about with mobile health technologies, and that's more than a communication tool. As a social marketer, I think about how do I add mHealth features to my behavior change products, to my services and programs, not create standalone mobile health programs, but add them on to what I already do. And Sex Info was one of the first great mobile health interventions that looked at how to do that with STD prevention. How do I use these technologies to overcome psychological and social barriers? How do I use mobile technologies to develop new incentives and reinforcers for people to change behaviors? And how do I create new ways of providing social support to people who are trying to change behaviors? You know, if you're paying attention and you know that 60% of the people who go on Facebook are doing that through a mobile phone, the social implications of using cell phones for behavior change are enormous because people are already doing that. We just have to catch up. How can I use place shifting? Use SNS, use co-presence, use the virtual worlds. This is an app by Stella Artois. If you point your camera down the street, it will tell you the location of every bar that serves Stella Artois beer. All right, that's what's going on over there. Why can't you use that for public health services? Why should people have to, you know, how do we add GPS to create scalable behavior change programs? You know, the whole idea of GIS and maps on your phone has enormous possibilities for thinking about all kinds of public health programs, from where do I eat to where do I exercise to where do I sleep. And finally, how do I facilitate conversations among people, not just aim messages at them, I think is part of what the challenge is for mobile phones, because as I've said, you know, there's too many people who are just thinking of it as a way of point and shooting messages, rather than using it for all the social characteristics it also has. So I'm going to end with this idea and one final one. But, you know, mobile technologies are now going to put the pressure on us to be asking the question, are we available when, where, and how people want us to be? It's no longer about developing messages at the appropriate time and at the appropriate place for people. It's people actually reaching out to us when they need information and want things from us. So it's when you stop thinking about mobile as a technology and start thinking of it as a way to involve yourself in people's lives is when I think you'll find the biggest impact for mobile health. And we'll start hearing some stories about that next. Thank you very much.